This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We posted on the VPR Facebook page last night that we were going to talk about Southern rescue pets today. And these are pets, mostly dogs, brought up from high-kill shelters in the South by an expanding array of organizations. They're finding new homes here in Vermont. In response to our post, we got a flood of pictures and stories of Zoe, Daisy, Emmett, Sammy, Maisie, Emma, Sophie, and more. Cute and clearly well-loved dogs all. We're also getting stories, though, of concerns about dishonest transporters, of puppies arriving flea-ridden and sick after days on a packed transport truck, and dogs with serious behavioral issues that need dedicated attention and can even risk harm to owners and other pets. There's no doubt that bringing pets up from the South saves animals' lives, but the many groups involved vary widely, and there can be risks involved. Today, we're going to talk about both sides of the issue. With us is Susan McMillan. She's a veterinarian and owner of the Old North End Veterinary Clinic and Vet-to-Pet Mobile Veterinary Service in Burlington. She also serves on the board of directors of the Humane Society of Chittenden County. Welcome to the program. What a pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks, Jane. You did a really good job of summing up the issue.
Oh, good. Well, yes. Maybe you can go a little deeper and start by telling us what's happening in the South that there are so many available dogs that need owners and that we can do this kind of round shipment.
Yeah, I think it's probably the same thing that's been going on forever. I think their spay and neuter programs maybe are not as successful as ours. They definitely, I think, have more stray animals than we have up here. So they just have an abundance of animals. I think it probably started off back with Katrina when there was a big natural disaster, and the internet was in place, and we were able to respond really quickly. And that's, I think, kind of what kicked off this whole ability to quickly communicate with communities down there and get animals out with cute pictures of either sick or really cute puppies and kittens. And there you go.
Is it a different cultural situation? I mean, why are there more dogs there than there are here?
I think it really does get back to whether or not we're willing to spay and neuter our pets. I really think that's the bottom line. Up here, it's pretty uncommon to see an unspayed or an unneutered animal. And you often can't get an animal out of a shelter unless they've already been spayed or neutered, where I just don't think that's the case down there.
And what about here? Are we finding that spay and neutering program is working so well that there's really a lack of animals to adopt? Because there are always animals at the shelters that you see cute pictures of here, too.
I know. Actually, our shelter here in Chittenden County sometimes does have a lack of dogs now. And
which is a good
thing. It's a great problem to have. It really is. It means we're really being successful. And it means that unless you want a purebred dog, if you want a mutt, then you basically have to go look elsewhere, which is great. And that's why this pipeline is, in a way, fantastic, because it solves two problems. We want pets. They have too many down south. And so we can make it happen. The question is, how do you do it properly?
And is it perpetuating a cycle? I mean, is it then saying you can continue to have these high-kill shelters and overabundance of animals that need help because there will always be people to get them somewhere else?
Yeah, I don't know that anyone down south is saying, oh, let's not worry about spaying and neutering because we can keep finding homes, because they are killing, euthanizing animals. One estimate is 2 to 3 million animals every year, pets, often healthy and sweet and great, and they are euthanized every year because there's too many of them. So we're not there yet. We don't have to worry yet that we're going to run out of animals. And that's a whole other question about pushing the spay-neuter down south. And we do have to keep doing that.
And we also don't get to feel superior that we're saving
exactly
all of the animals who are in need of.
We really shouldn't. Some of the animals are, it's not all down south. They're coming from New York City. They're coming from shelters in any major city. We could be doing the same thing from Chicago or Detroit, I'm sure. It just happens that a lot of the relationships we have are with the shelters down south.
We're talking today about this Southern Pet Pipeline. We're talking about how it's developed over the last decade or so, that there are these frequent transports of dogs coming up from the South and being adopted, often sight unseen by Vermonters and by others in our region. And we'd love to hear your experience. Did you get your dog from a rescue organization that's trying to save these dogs from high kill shelters? How did you go about doing your research, and what's your experience been like with your pet? If you have a question for our guest, Susan McMillan, you can also call us 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note along with many, many others who've been writing in on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We got a note from VT5150 who says, I rescued a dog from Tennessee and he barks with an accent. Best dog ever. Rescue dogs rock. Bobby says, I've been rescuing dogs brought up from the South for 16 years. Each dog has been wonderful, has had his or her own personal issues, and each responded to gentle, safe care in my home and as part of my daily life. The rewards of rescue are immense. The work and dedication ongoing. Tears and laughter never end. The dogs often come from horrendous situations of abuse, neglect, pain, loneliness, or overcrowding. They're cautious and need calm, quiet attention and an owner who will do just about anything to make his or her life great at last. Another nice story here from Margaret, who says, I got my beautiful girl Olivia, a Great Pyrenees Golden Retriever mix, from a rescue group called Big Fluffy Dog Rescue out of Tennessee in October of 2014. The group is very active in Southern rescue and adoption and has grown to adopt these Southern dogs not only up to New England, but as far as Ohio and Texas. So, Susan McMillan, let's talk about some of the good sides here of adoption. I mean, we've been talking about this fact that there sometimes are there's a lack of dogs for people who want to adopt them, and these dogs that are facing death in shelters. So, you know, in some ways, it is a win-win for many people.
It's a total win-win. And I, like one of the people said, rescue dogs do rock. I totally agree with that. And our goal is totally to save lives. And we are doing that. And there are a lot of great stories out there. There are organizations down South who are vetting appropriately. They're making sure the animals have their vaccines, are an appropriate age. They've already temperament tested them a bit, and they're doing their best to not ship problems up here. And it's not that the problem animals don't deserve to be rescued, but the bottom line is animals will continue to be euthanized. So everyone's better off if we are trying to ship animals that we feel are healthy before they get on the transport. It doesn't do a sick animal a lot of good to come up here and go through the stress of the drive and the transport while they're already sick. And you also get into the problem of contaminating or making our herd sick, right? So you have to look at it in a way. Our community is a herd of, let's just say, dogs. And if we start introducing a lot of parvovirus and distemper virus and several diseases, it's just not good for the herd. But you asked me about the good side. I'm sorry.
I guess the good side is obvious in a way.
It can be done. Absolutely can be done with appropriate testing and a good transport system and then a rescue group up here that is capable of handling the pets they bring up before finding a good home. It's an amazing life-saving process.
I mentioned we've been getting stories from people who didn't have great experiences in addition to the people who have been really pleased. Todd says, we adopted a terrier mix named Cooper from down south right after Hurricane Katrina, supposedly completely up to date with shots, but 2 to 3 days later had him evaluated at our vet. The vet discovered Cooper had an advanced case of heartworm. Our vet didn't know if he could reverse this advanced case, but offered to do it at his cost because he felt bad that we'd tried to do the right thing by adopting sight unseen from this high kill area. The takeaway for us, Todd says, was check paperwork thoroughly and validate names and vet info on paperwork. Anyone with a printer can create official looking paperwork. Oh, yeah, the organization that we got Cooper from offered to transport him back to Louisiana and treat him there. 6 more days in a truck, really? Yeah. There was no way we were going to let him go with them, Todd says. And Ginny says, aside from contagious diseases such as heartworm, the behavior issue of these dogs is a huge problem. Because the culture and laws in the South are so different from New England, there are large numbers of stray dogs that are essentially wild dogs. Instead of selecting dogs to breed that want to please and get along with people, the selection in the Southern situation is for survival characteristics. Susan, do you think that's true?
I think in a way it is. Absolutely. The first person talking about the paperwork, it really is critical. And the hard part is once you've gone online and fallen in love with the picture of the animal that you've decided is perfect, it's really hard then to turn around and turn away from that animal because the paperwork isn't in place. But I just talked this morning with someone at our shelter, and there's a case of a rescue group in the state who has parvovirus in their facility now. They are, as we speak, taking in lost and found dogs. And someone who rescued from them very recently just spent, I understand, at least $3,000 getting their puppy well from parvovirus. He was shipped up here, and he got sick after he got here, and he had parvo. The paperwork is critical, and you have to ask your rescue group before you fall in love with an animal. Ask them what their protocol is. Ask them to see paperwork. We want these animals to be vaccinated before they get on a truck. And we want to make sure they don't have signs of infectious disease. They should have a health certificate. And if the group can't provide that to you, your best bet really is to walk away, because as badly as you feel about this particular dog, you really are, in a way, contributing to the problem by continuing to give a group an outlet for the animals that they maybe are not bringing up properly.
Is it sort of like the caveat you get about dating websites? You know, you shouldn't just trust the picture of the animal that you're looking
at. Well, I tell people all the time, you don't want to adopt an animal based on a picture. That's like getting married to someone because he's blonde. That, you know, this is a long-term commitment, and you really want to know something about the animal. If the rescue group hasn't done temperament testing, or if they'll let you adopt sight unseen without having, they should encourage you to come meet the animal before you commit, because, of course, not every match is a good one. So you really want to vet them out, and if they are uncomfortable when you're asking questions, or if they dodge questions, or they can't show you paperwork, you really want to look in the other way. There is a website called pupquest.org, which really thoroughly walks you through an adoption process, and it really helps guide you first how to pick a rescue organization, and then what steps to go through to make sure that you're doing the best you can. Failures will happen, and by failure, I just mean you can adopt an animal that ends up being sick. We're not saying that, but we want to increase the odds of it being successful and not a huge costly endeavor that you hadn't anticipated.
Let's go to Marty calling in from Arlington. Hi, Marty. Go ahead.
Hi there. I haven't had a personal experience, but my son and daughter-in-law who live in Connecticut adopted a dog from the South. And I don't know the process that they went through, but the long and short of it was that once the dog was in their house, they discovered some sort of parasitic infection. I assume some form of worms that would have, essentially contaminated the soil on their property. It took considerable effort to deal with this. And I, just hope that people who are adopting have an opportunity to make sure that stool samples and perhaps blood samples, as in the heartworm issue, are actually being taken so that they can make sure that people are taking home a healthy animal to give it the greatest possibility of a win-win situation.
Yeah, Marty, thanks for your call. Appreciate hearing your story of your son and daughter-in-law. I'm sorry they had that experience. Let's go to Anita in Burlington. Hi, Anita. Go ahead.
Hi there. I appreciate the airing of this program. Let me just say that first. I would like to know if Dr. Miller can change her use of the word euthanasia. when referring to killing healthy, adoptable pets. Euthanasia is for animals who can no longer, who are too sick and to be able to put them out of their misery, obviously. But that's not the case with the hundreds of thousands and, as you said, millions of dogs who get put down in shelters every year because of no other reason that there's no one to adopt them or no one has taken the care to find a viable rescue for them.
Anita, I take your point, and let me put this to Susan McMillan, because I think actually in your defense you said both kill and euthanize. But, you know, what do you think about that idea that we're sort of soft-pedaling
right.
what's happening?
Well, I guess I have to say that if we don't euthanize these animals, and I do think it's, I'm using the word appropriately, assuming that in many cases the animals are humanely euthanized, not to say that it's not dreadful and an awful situation, but if we don't euthanize these animals, then they are living an endless life in a place that doesn't have the room for them. Some of those shelters, many of them do euthanize for space. And what choice do they have? They are overwhelmed with animals. We do the best we can, like we're talking about today, to get the animals out into healthy homes. But if you go into these no-kill shelters, you often can find a dreadful situation where the animals are not being euthanized humanely. They're being housed. Some of them are sick. Some of them are healthy. Some of them are behaviorally really challenged. But in my opinion, to not humanely euthanize an animal, but to just house him potentially for years, I find that to be worse than euthanizing an animal. I would rather humanely let an animal go, even a healthy one. And I'm not for it, but again, we have too many animals in this country. We can't find a home for all of them. I stand behind a humane euthanasia, and that's why I think we should do our best to bring up the animals that are the healthiest, whether it's emotional health or medically healthy. It's Sophie's choice. But it has to happen.
I do take Anita's point there, though, that, you know, nobody should be under some mistaken impression that euthanasia is not killing. It is.
Yes.
Euthanasia
yes.
is death for the animal.
Yeah.
And Anita, we take that point.
Yes.
Let's go to Rick in Gansfort, New York. Hi, Rick. Go right ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah. I just moved up to the area from Missouri and just kind of wanting to clarify the situation down there with the shelters. One of the big things down there is that the shelters themselves are not federally or government funded. They're all voluntary funds, including like the medicines for the dogs and the food, even the water. You know, there's constantly fund drives going on to fund and help supply these shelters. And the other problem is, especially in the more rural areas, is the puppy mills. You know, they'll have the puppy mills down there. They'll get raided. And then these shelters all of a sudden get inundated with, you know, these dogs that are sorely in need of attention and really don't have the funds to take care of.
Yeah, Rick, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. Certainly puppy mills, nothing that's isolated just to the south. We see them even here in Vermont. And welcome to the area, Rick. I'm glad you moved up here. You wanted to jump in,
Susan?
Well,
yeah, I was just going to say our shelters up here are also not federally or state funded. The Humane Society of Chittenden County, I don't think gets a penny, except any organization that's a 501c3 gets the tax break for sure. But they don't receive any government funding either. Mm. But it's a big problem.
Yeah, Rick, thanks for your call. Some other stories we're getting here from people. Amber says two of our girls are Southern Belles. Emma, originally from South Carolina, came from All Breed Rescue, Vermont in 2012, and we had a great experience with them. Sophie was saved by my cousin in North Carolina and brought up here properly vaccinated and spayed at 8 weeks old. Both of them had a rough start at life, and it is great to be able to give them the life and love they deserve. We need to keep getting dogs out of the South. It's not a good place to be a pup these days. And Katrina posts with a picture saying, I adopted this little love from a local rescue organization. He came from South Carolina. I just love him to pieces, and I'm so thankful to have him in my life. He's been such a good companion. He's so smart and come so far in the year and a half I've had him. We've overcome separation anxiety, and we're working on his reactivity. He's turning into such a great dog. I even write a blog about him. He's my little love. And I want to mention that many of you have been sending in pictures of your dogs. We actually have a slideshow up on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. And I know Susan warned us about how your heart melts when you see a picture of a cute dog, and it certainly will. These are some great dogs on our Facebook page, so you can go there. You can add your own story, good or bad. You can talk about the risks you found. And how did you find a good organization to work with when it came to rescuing a dog from out of state? Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk with one organization about how they do it and how they actually think about vetting owners in addition to dogs. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note again on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're looking at the Southern Pet Pipeline. Animals, mostly dogs, brought up from high-kill shelters in other states for adoption in our region. It's not just the South. There are dogs coming in from New York City and elsewhere as well. We've been talking with veterinarian Susan McMillan, who serves on the board of directors at the Humane Society of Chittenden County, and we're getting a lot of calls and emails from many of you who've had experiences of all sorts. You can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net with your experience or your questions. Elizabeth wrote in to say many good-hearted people are being taken advantage of every day in Vermont. Their passion to rescue pets makes them good targets for organizations that care little for the animals and care more about the money. We have seen countless well-meaning animal lovers victimized by adopting sick and unhealthy pets that weren't properly treated before being shipped en masse to Vermont. Megan says, as an emergency critical care veterinary technician transplant from Virginia, I would say the milder climates and larger urban areas of southern states allow for better survival rates of feral dogs and cats, thus higher populations in shelters than in Vermont, rather than a difference in spay-neuter programs. And Lo Ling says, our dog Otto was brought to Vermont from the south. After we've had him for several months, our vet discovered that Otto had heartworm that wasn't caught by the adoption operation. We treated the heartworm, but we couldn't cure Otto of his fear. A behaviorist told us we'd have to spend our lives managing Otto's exposure to people outside the family. We tried because he was loyal and loving, and we loved him back. But in the end, we put him down because he was too dangerous for city living in a house with kids. I wish the adoption operation had been more selective about which dogs to rescue and more selective about where they allowed dogs to be adopted. On that note, let's bring in another guest here. And Susan, I'll bring you back in as well. But on this question of how do rescue organizations vet the dogs and vet the potential owners, we'll talk with Wes Gibbs. He's a volunteer program and transportation coordinator for Potter's Angels Rescue. Wes, thanks for being on the program.
Yes, hello.
So how do you figure out, you know, to Li Ling's post, how do you figure out what dogs are the right ones to bring up and then how to match them with the right owners?
Well, the process that we use is we have a core group in the South who help assess the animals. We work with a shelter down there, and they fully vet, you know, distemper. They are all heartworm checked and, you know, checked for other diseases. And we try to the best of our ability, to get the animals, the dogs in this case, out of the shelter and into a temporary foster home right there in the South, and while we arrange transport, and then get them in a transport headed to our way. So, like I say, all animals, all dogs are spayed, neutered, have been checked for heartworm and distemper and current vaccines as much as possible, yes.
And then what about in terms of potential owners? We had set this show up, actually, and somebody on our staff said, you know, I have a home visit from Potter's Angels tomorrow. They're coming to our house. They're going to make sure that everything is all set before we can even adopt a dog. So are you looking at potential owners as well?
Yes. We have a lengthy application process. And along with that, having to provide personal references and those types of things, we do in a very high percentage of our adoptions make a personal home visit with one of our volunteers to check out an individual's home, to see how their children act, if there's another animal in the home, what types of potential problems there could be, you know, as far as safety issues, streets, all different types of things like that. So we take that very seriously, and when at all possible, we do make a actual home visit and speak to the people and try to answer questions then. If for some reason they live beyond our means, because we adopt out to Maine, Pennsylvania, mainly in New England, but sometimes they're just out of our way. We try to find a rescue group that might be in the area to do a home visit for us, or we have the adopter send us pictures and further communications that way so that we can at least make our best effort to check into the situation.
Susan McMillan, you wanted to chime in, too, on that whole situation.
Yeah, Wes made a couple of really good points. At the beginning, he made it clear that they deal with honest partners down wherever they're bringing animals up from. It's not always down south. But you have to have a good relationship with a good either shelter or some organization down there that is doing the work for you and whom you trust to actually do the testing. He showed that it's really labor intensive and costly to do this appropriately. They're spaying and neutering, and they have a health certificate. And then he also talked about the really safe transport of these animals. And each one of those is a critical step to trying to accomplish this in a way that's healthy for the animals.
And if somebody is vetting the humans, then
yes,
that's a good sign in your book?
Absolutely. As much as I want the adopter to vet the rescue group, obviously also we want to make sure we're getting these animals. Ultimately, we're trying to get the animals into, quote unquote, their forever home. We want them to get into the home where it is going to be a good fit.
We got a note from Myrna, an animal behavior consultant, who says, this is a subject near and dear to my heart because these animals increasingly show up in my behavioral practice. I'm concerned about the lack of knowledge of ethology, animal behavior from a biological perspective, that often dominates this process from beginning to end. Lacking that knowledge, we wind up with one driven primarily by human emotion that serves neither these animals nor those who adopt them well.
Boy, is that true.
Let's go to Jeff, calling in from Grand Isle. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I adopted a little dog from down south through Chico's, which is a local thing everybody can see on Facebook or Facebook and Craigslist.
Mm-hmm.
Turned into a wonderful dog. I've always owned well-bred dogs up here. Beyond that, I want to make the comment about the Humane Society, that they make it very, very difficult to adopt dogs. It becomes this almost very strange test to get a new dog. They also charge a huge amount of money because everybody's trying to make everything okay and perfect, whereas I think the idea is to, like, get these dogs out, or cats, into the community and save them.
Jeff, thanks for your call. I appreciate that. Dr. McMillan is on the board of directors of the Humane Society of Chittenden County. What do you think about Jeff's?
I think Jeff is absolutely right. We used to make it way too hard to adopt. As a vet, I always ask people, where did you get your pet? And for years, I hardly ever heard anyone say the Humane Society, at least not our Humane Society. The bar was so high. And our shelter now has embraced the new practice of it's called open adoptions, And I think if Jeff were to go in there now, he would have a very different experience than he did even a couple of years ago. We've gotten away from the idea that no home is going to be better than the home that the animal has at the shelter. And we've gotten into a way more open process. So you're right. It used to be way too hard. The expense part, again, that gets back to doing it properly. When you adopt an animal from the Humane Society, it's the best deal in town. I don't know if you pay $200 or $300 now, $300, but the animal is spayed or neutered, dewormed, heartworm tested, feline leukemia tested, behavioral tested. It's been fed and cared for days or weeks or maybe months. And the amount you pay is nothing compared to what went into this animal compared to the free pet that you may get on Craigslist, which often will cost hundreds, if not thousands of dollars if the animal hasn't been vetted properly.
Wes, how much does it cost to get a dog through Potter's Angels?
The adoption fees range from $300 for a puppy under a year old and $250 until, I believe, six or seven, and then it goes down from there. It is expensive, you know, in one sense, but with our process, we essentially pay for vetting for all these animals, all these dogs in South Carolina or in the South, not just South Carolina. And then to board them down there, to get them on transport, it costs approximately $110 per dog to have them transported north. And then, like you say, they're spayed, they're neutered, they're up to date on shots. We, again, worm them when they get here, flea treat them, just in case they picked up anything along the transport. And so, like you said, a couple hundred dollars, $300 for a fully vetted companion is cheap compared to going to your local vet in Vermont and trying to get that done.
We got a note from Lisa who says, my feeling is you have to be very careful in choosing the rescue group you adopt from. We did our research and we felt very comfortable that the group we adopted from was doing it totally for the dogs and not to make money or to earn accolades in their community. Jessica says, we are looking to adopt and have found it nice that many of the shelters now require a home visit in order to match you with the right pup. I'm a little surprised that some shelters are charging as much as a breeder, though, for a pup. And Ellen in Underhill says, rescue dogs have not cornered the market on behavior issues. Having taught dog training classes for many years, I've seen just as many dogs from breeders with behavioral issues. It's up to those with the opposable thumbs to modify the behaviors that are problematic or to find responsible workarounds so that both humans and dogs can enjoy their lives together calmly and safely. Many of the behavior problems in dogs are caused or made worse by humans who do not understand how to effectively communicate with dogs. Attending a basic obedience course can make a world of difference. We are talking today about rescue animals, specifically rescue animals coming from other states, and how that adoption process works here in Vermont. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, call 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note, maybe with a picture. We've got a slideshow of some rescue pups up on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking about dogs, mostly dogs, brought up from high-kill shelters in other states for adoption in our region. And we're hearing many of your stories about how it's worked out for you or not worked out. You can call 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. We're talking with veterinarian Susan McMillan, who also serves on the board of directors of the Humane Society of Chittenden County, and with Wes Gibbs, volunteer program and transportation coordinator for Potter's Angels Rescue. And let's go to Paige, calling in from Burlington. Hi, Paige. Go ahead.
Hello. I take my dog Tally to the Old North End Veterinary Clinic, so I really appreciate the doctor. But I'm calling about in the last 20 years I've rescued or I've been the person that's been lucky enough to have two rescue dogs from All Breeds Rescue, and they've both been quirky dogs, but wonderful dogs, and I've really been very, very lucky. However, I had one dog for a very short period of time that didn't work out, and I really wish. And it was a really difficult situation. I felt awful. I wish there had been a home visit. This was 15 years ago, and I guess they didn't do that at that point. I wish there had been a home visit, and that this dog had been brought to the house by the All Breeds Rescue, and they knew about my daughter being 4 years old. They knew that I had another dog in the house, but that didn't seem to be a concern to them.
Hmm. Paige, I'm sorry about your experience, and I can understand that, you know, for many people that would be sort of a heart-wrenching decision to make. Thank you for sharing it. Let's get another call in here from Hal in Enosburg. Hi, Hal. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to say I had a very successful rescue from North Star Lab Rescue. They operate out of Massachusetts, but they have a volunteer in Vermont, and they have a facility in Atlanta, Georgia, and then they have people scouring the kennels. My dog came from Birmingham, Alabama, and he was on the street for months, and he was going to be euthanized. They rescued him, brought him to Atlanta. He was treated there. He was underweight, but he was in good health when he came north, and I actually agreed to go see him, you know, while he was in transport. And I feel like they vetted me very good. I filled out an elaborate application, and I got a health certificate. I got the whole, the history as much as they knew of the dog and the history that he received when he was treated in Atlanta. But the thing that they also were very strong was that they wanted him to see my vet within 3 days. And I also signed that they could visit me anytime within the next 6 months. And that I couldn't give the dog away to anybody, that if the dog didn't work out, it had to go back to them. All things that I think are very important. We followed up a lot with them with emails and pictures. The dog has just been wonderful.
Oh, Hal, I'm so glad you've had such a good experience and appreciate you telling us that. You know, again, going to the point of humans are vetted, too, in many of these cases. And for Hal, that was a good thing and, you know, something he was willing to do in order to make sure that the situation worked out. One more call in here from Midge in Rochester before we go back to our guests. Hi, Midge.
Hi, Jane. I can't speak to the vetting process, but I did want to share that I have a dear friend who has been working in two of the shelters down in South Carolina, and one of them houses 300 dogs, and the other one houses 500, and we're not even talking about the cats. So they are overwhelmed. They do run on volunteer services for the most part, and my friend has been in charge of working with socializing the dogs and walking them, setting up volunteer programs for walkers. But they just are totally overwhelmed. And the mentality for caring for dogs and is different than it is for here. And so it's an uphill battle for them. And I'm so glad that there are opportunities for at least some of these animals to be taken care of, because like many of your listeners, they've had great experiences. So thanks. Great show.
Midge, I appreciate your point here. You know that this is a complicated situation, as Dr. McMillan mentioned. You know, a lot of animals and a lot of animals that can't be cared for. And how does it all work out? It's a difficult equation for many people. I appreciate your thoughts on that. Wes Gibbs, we've been hearing from people talking about how to work with an organization, how to make sure that you have an organization you can trust. Dr. McMillan's talked about really doing your homework on the organization itself before you even think about whether or not to get a specific dog. I know you work for Potter's Angels, but in general, you know, how do you advise people on finding a reputable organization, making sure that you're putting your trust in an organization that you think is worthy?
Well, I
I mean, I think that because we don't always have the appropriate dog for a potential adopter. And my advice to anybody that's still looking, if we can't provide what they're looking for, is to, just like they've mentioned, is do your research, make the phone calls, put people on the spot to ask them, you know, who, what they've done and who they've adopted out to and who they work with for vets and different things like that. You know, if you're going to do this, you want to be open and honest with people, and I think that's what they need to hear and see. So, you know, just doing the background work on any rescue.
A woman named Laurel in Vermont posted, I know that heartworm is present in all 50 states. However, I was wondering about the risks of drug-resistant strains of heartworm disease. Is there any risk to dogs already in Vermont from those who've come up from areas where heartworm is more prevalent? Susan McMillan?
Yeah, absolutely. We don't have a lot of heartworm in Vermont right now. It's mosquito-borne. It is here, but they certainly have vast... way more cases of heartworm down south than we have here. And we are now bringing up all kinds of heartworm-positive dogs. A heartworm-positive dog who has received treatment down south, no problem at all. The next not-so-good position to be in would be you bring up a dog that you know is heartworm-positive and the new owner is expected to treat him. But at that point, you have a heartworm-positive dog here waiting to get bitten by a mosquito as you go about trying to get him treated. And now you potentially have introduced more heartworm into our native population. And then the worst case is the animal that comes up heartworm-positive. The owner doesn't even know it, which was the case with one of your callers and Otto. I don't even think they knew he was heartworm-positive. I knew Otto. And so they not only got a new dog with behavioral problems, but it turns out he was also heartworm positive. So that was kind of a perfect storm of the worst case. But we're also introducing things into our soil that are hard to eradicate. Whipworm, we have whipworm, but nothing like they have down south. And some of these things like parvo and distemper and whipworm are very hard to eradicate from things like dog parks, doggy daycare facilities, and just the soil in your neighborhood. So if your neighbors are bringing up animals that are infected, whether they know it or not, they may be contaminating our whole environment in a way.
So you're worried about the disease that's
Absolutely.
Being brought up here.
Absolutely.
Pretty, significantly worried, or is this just a, you know, back of your mind concern?
No, it's a pretty significant concern for two reasons. One, I think we're potentially infecting our animals here. And secondly, I think if this gets a lot worse, there's going to be some attempt to try to better regulate it, which scares me because, first of all, we can't afford it as a state to add more regulations. But we want to keep this something that we all can do together. As a community, we can help bring these animals up down south, but we have to encourage the people that are doing it well. And we have to really discourage the people who aren't doing it well because it's going to get bad enough that someone at the state level is going to try to intervene.
We got a note from Abby who thinks that there needs to be a nationwide campaign on spaying and neutering that's more effective. And she says even though dogs are being transported up north from the south, any campaign must be directed at the entire country. It wouldn't hurt for everyone to hear this message. If our goal is to educate or change values, our message is not likely to be accepted if it's focused only on the south and comes from northerners who are sometimes seen as thinking they are superior. In addition to the wonderful efforts of many, many volunteers to save animals in need, I think it's also time to use our resources and energy to form a coalition of humane societies, animal cruelty prevention organizations, rescue groups, and the like to begin to actively promote responsible pet ownership. Wes Gibbs, what do you think would help this situation? And we talked earlier about the fact that no matter how many groups are trying to bring animals to owners who want them, there are still lots of animals being killed every year because there are far more animals than there are potential homes for them. So from your perspective, what do you think would help?
I mean, I wish that there was an affordable way to get the message across to, yeah, nationwide, that spaying and neutering is a necessity. You know, somebody mentioned the puppy mills. That's a key piece of this, and I think that sometimes people try to expand their pocket with a puppy mill, and then whatever's left over are the ones that are hitting the shelters and are on the streets because they've been dumped. I don't know how to get that point across. I mean, we see it every day in the television and social media that it's important to spay and neuter, but sometimes people just don't get it, I guess. I don't know how to make that happen.
Well, it sounds like you're doing the work you can. Wes Gibbs is a volunteer program and transportation coordinator for Potter's Angels Rescue. Thank you for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
And Susan McMillan is a veterinarian and owner of the Old North End Veterinary Clinic and Vet-to-Pet Mobile Veterinary Service in Burlington. She also serves on the board of directors of the Humane Society of Chittenden County. Dr. McMillan, thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you, Jane.
You can continue to send us your stories and read others, and you can go to the Vermont Edition Facebook page if you want to see some pictures of rescue pups. Our listeners have been sending them in and sharing their stories. We have a slideshow of the photos and the stories. Go to Facebook and look up Vermont Edition. Our program is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gail Rosen. Liam Connors directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.